Found this in Gunner room. Gunner mirror near.
What is it?
Well, it's
sick the hornets.
Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and
Aaron O'Brien.
Today we're here to talk about Star Trek. We have been lifelong fans of Star Trek, and there's never any way to exhaust talking about Star Trek. There's always so much with what's out there.
Well, let's put it this way. We exhaust other people by talking about Star Trek. So we're going to exhaust you with our vast love of Star Trek, and hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Most definitely. So, want to give us a little bit of background?
For myself, again, my name's Aaron O'Brien. I am an artist, and I work with a group called Visions. It's a Buffalo art group that we do comic book art. So, I'm an illustrator, artist, and a huge Star Trek fan. Sci-fi fan, fantasy fan, you know, but, you know, obviously Star Trek is huge in my life.
Yeah, most definitely. I can't remember not having Star Trek on in some capacity. My dad was a big Star Trek fan, and it was just huge. It was always in my life. I found Star Wars on my own, and I kind of latched onto that because I found it, and it wasn't like indoctrinated in me when I was a child. But after the prequels came out, they were so disappointing. I kind of jumped back into Star Trek, like, bigger because, like, you know, right. There is three failure Star Wars movies and three fantastic Star Wars movies, and Star Trek had a much better ratio than that as far as good movies to bad movies,
right?
And TV shows,
right? And for me, I grew up actually. I'm older than you, and I grew up actually as a kid watching the original series quite religiously, and then Next Generation came out when I was probably in like middle school. So that was like a huge thing for me that, you know, I already loved the original series, and now we've got, you know, Next Generation, and then it just kept on getting better and better. The whole franchise took off. But as for like Star Trek, compared to others, I mean, not that I don't love Star Wars in its own way, but Star Trek has something that I think is unquantifiable for different mediums of sci-fi. I think it has a dignity to it that a lot of sci-fi doesn't have. Like Star Wars tries to, you know, show how to be a good person, you know, as a Jedi Knight. But what if you're not a Jedi? What if you're a Wookiee? You know, and whereas Star Trek's always trying to say we could always be better as a human race, as towards other people, you know, and that's what's great about it. So
most definitely Star Wars is more a hero's tale. It's the young man who, you know, has, you know, dreams to the future, and it's his tale. You know, then they say it's Darth Vader's tale, but it's the same thing. He starts off as a kid and he's got like these dreams of becoming a Jedi, where Star Trek is all about the story, the characters, and what our future, our personal future could be like.
Hopefully. We don't all kill each other. But that's what I always thought that, you know, it Star Trek embodies, I think, the human, the best of what humanity could become. And that's what's great about it for me. It always inspires hope, even when it's kind of dark. You kind of feel like, you know, there is a possibility we could be better. Yeah, as people, and that's what I love about it. So, I continue to hope that the franchise will keep on growing. We'll discuss recent Star Trek stuff in the future as well. But right now, I'm always delving back into the old as well because the old has so much to offer.
Yeah, I try to watch episodes like every single night if possible, or at least a couple times a week. And we will definitely have an episode where we speak about the future of Star Trek, the news for the movie, any rumors about television shows and what we hope to see personally, like our pipe dreams. Maybe someone will listen to us and be like, hey, that's an idea and steal it. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, you can steal any ideas from us. You know, just give us a credit once in a while.
Just not our comic.
So why don't we go into what we're going to talk about for this episode, the desert island of what would happen if you were stranded on a desert island and you had just a handful of Star Trek episodes that we wanted to keep with us, you know, just to keep us alive. Who cares about food or water? We just need the Star Trek to keep us moving.
Need Star Trek so we can have a finite number of times to watch them before we do perish. That's great.
The last coconut. Well, why don't you start with one of your favorites, and then I'll go with another of mine.
Okay. One of the favorites I picked was Best of Both Worlds, and we're not dichotomizing between one and two. It's just the whole
putting them together.
The whole thing. It's just a fantastic two-episode, two-parter, like the best cliffhanger there probably is ever been in Star Trek.
Absolutely, it's great. It's so especially at the time. I remember seeing, you know, Jean-Luc Picard becoming a Borg. You're like, no, this cannot happen. This is not happening. You know, and it's just wow. You know, just everything about it is amazing. You know, even the ending. You know how Picard and Data kind of figure out how to, you know, vanquish the Borg at that time, you know, by putting them all to sleep.
It was pretty impressive, and like even Patrick Stewart was unaware of what was going to happen to his character. He was thinking he might be being written out.
Right. And what's great about that too is there's so much on that in that two-parter episode. The other commander, I can't remember her name right now. She's kind of like gunning for Riker's
Shelby.
Yeah, Commander Shelby. I mean, you have respect for her, but man, she is just like nasty. She just wants to, she was just going to knock over anybody just to get in, you know, get to the next level, you know?
And speaking of knocking down, Riker pretty much said, I'll knock you on your ass.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but you kind of like told it. She was like, we'll see. You know, she's like, she's ready for that fight. So she's a great character. I don't know if any fan fiction, if she shows up again.
I believe she shows up in some of the novelizations.
Okay.
I haven't read any myself. This is all hearsay from other podcasts I've listened to about Star Trek.
Okay.
Where Shelby has shown up again. I should try to do some research on what those books are. Because I have read some of the books that take place after the Destiny series are pretty good.
Right.
So, yeah, Best of Both Worlds, fantastic. Huge cliffhanger. I don't know if any of you got to go see the Fathom event that they did for Best of Both Worlds for the Blu-ray release. It was amazing seeing it in high definition and in the movie theater. It was so beautiful, except for the best part is the cliffhanger where Riker stands up and is like, fire,
right.
And then the way, because it's edited together, there's not that great dramatic like outro music of the episode ending.
Right,
it just flows into the next one. So like part of the greatness of that scene is diminished because it flows immediately into what happens next.
Well, it was a season cliffhanger too, because then you had to wait till like, you know, I don't know how many months it was until the next episode. So you were like, what's going to happen? Holy crap. You know, it was such a long time to wait for that when that happened. So,
well, I mean, at the time, it really wasn't that long because the seasons were 27 episodes apiece. So 27 weeks out of your year. I mean, you still got you're like half the year's gone.
So. I lived and breathed by this. So this was like, you know, like I sat there in my bed worrying what happened to Jean-Luc all night, you know.
Well, it's not like Game of Thrones. We only get 10 episodes and then have to wait. You know, that's only 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Then you have to wait another, you know, that's most of the year.
Right. True enough.
You've got 40-something weeks to wait instead of 20-something weeks.
Right.
That's...
Well, one of mine is Next Gen that I have a deep love for is Chain of Command. I have so much... It's so interesting on so many levels for me. That's another two-parter, of course, where the Cardassians are amassing, you know, ships... You know, that looks like they might be doing an invasion. And Starfleet just mysteriously has a mission for Picard, Worf, and Beverly Crusher to go into this... was it like a moon or an asteroid? I can't remember. It was like a dead planet with a cave system in it. And they had to basically infiltrate a Cardassian, you know, compound. And during the whole time, the whole crew doesn't even know what's going on, except the chain of command, Captain Jellicoe takes over.
God, I hate that guy.
You know, it's funny is Captain Jellicoe, the actor who played him, his name is Ron Cox, and he did a couple things. He was the bad guy in RoboCop too, and it's great if you see him because he's just ruthless in there too. He just he screws over RoboCop, one of his other corporate executives. He has them, you know, executed.
And then they switch their crime ring to a four shift system instead of a three shift system.
There you go. That's exactly. And the whole crew is thrown off balance. And the other thing about Jellicoe I didn't understand was why did he make it so difficult for Riker? I mean, why did he not like Riker? It was like Riker wasn't really. I mean, Riker was confused, but he was willing to go along for a long time. But he's just like. He just did not like. He wanted a yes man, and Riker wasn't going to be that guy.
Riker was more like a second captain. Like he wasn't really the first officer. Like he would answer to Picard, but like Picard would just like do whatever, and he would basically be in command of the Enterprise.
Picard just sitting trapped in his ready room, just reading Shakespeare all day, and while Riker's doing all the all the maintenance and making sure all the shifts are running correctly, you know, doing all the paperwork. Picard's just, you know, going on an archaeological dig or something like that. Only comes out when the Romulans show up or whatever. So,
and you know, the big takeaway from Chain of Command is you know, the torture of Picard, and there are four lights instead of five. I just can't help but wonder if like the word in the Universal Translator for four and five are just like mixed. And
right, and what's interesting about that is that's part of it that's so cool to me is that they're showing torture in there, and it's got its own dialogue there, but it's also of what torture is and why it doesn't exactly always work, and how, I mean, Picard obviously is a superb human being in the show, no matter what. So
he's the most perfect human being to ever have existed in all of humanity.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely, besides the pattern baldness, he is definitely up there with perfection of how the pinnacle of human perfection of what you could be.
I'm sure that's a choice in the 24th century. I'm sure.
Do you want your son to be bald or do you want him to have hair? Oh, bald. So he was born as a baby bald, but yeah, so it was really interesting. And another interesting thing, I don't, you know, is the character who tortures is Gul Moran. He is, his name is David Warner. He's been in a ton of different stuff. He was actually Chancellor Gorkin, too, as well. So,
oh, don't forget, he was also in Star Trek V as the human ambassador to...
He was like some like throwaway character. He just like showed up on the... Hey, how's it going?
I just love how he's in two Star Trek movies back-to-back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Gorkin, he had enough makeup on, you know. But obviously, he's got some ties with the Star Trek franchise to get him in there. He was also in The Omen. He played evil, like technically Satan... In Time Bandits, one of my favorite movies as well. So that's a really great, movie if you haven't checked out Time Bandits by Terry Gilliam. So why don't we go to maybe another movie episode that you love?
I think another one I picked was The Pale Moonlight. I wanted to pick more Deep Space Nine episodes, but this is like one of the few that actually kind of stands on its own. It's got its own encompassed story. Where you don't really have to know everything that's going on. You just kind of have to understand the basic, you know, what the Romulans are to really get to the story. And it's great where Sisko compromises all his Federation-isms.
That's a problem I have with this episode is that it's Sisko. Sisko isn't Picard as the highly enlightened man, but he's a really good man, and he's a straight arrow. He's a little rough around the edges, but he definitely, you know, he definitely always tries to push for the greater good and whatever. And Pale Moonlight, I know he's trying to save people, like, you know, this Federation, but throwing a whole other civilization culture into war, it's just disturbing, you know, that he would go that far, you know?
But it's self-preservation,
sure,
and the preservation of the, you know, people, because even after the Minyan War is over, and if the Romulans are still safe,
right,
the Romulans could still come over what's left of the Federation, even though it's, like, you know, been taken over by the Romulan War. So it's, like, you know, insult to injury if you know, they get taken over by the Dominion, and then the Romulans are still there to torture them.
Well, and then the reality is that's probably what would have happened anyways. Even if Romulans didn't get into the war, that after they defeated the Federation, they would have come after the Romulans.
Yeah, they would have come after the Romulans, and so the Romulans, you know, would have been, you know, so he even did the Romulans a favor, even though he killed, you know, some of their ambassadors, or he let Garak kill.
Well, he didn't let him. He didn't know he was going to kill him, you know, but he definitely opened that door.
Garak pretty much said at the end, it's like, you chose me because you knew I would do whatever it took.
True, but that's what, I don't think he expected that, but... Like I said, it's like you open that door. It's like when you get involved with something that you know that could be a problem, you definitely need to worry about that, which Sisko, as a commanding officer, must know. You know, like there's certain people, certain things, certain doors you do not knock on, and he knocked on that door.
But it was so great. He's in his quarters. He's recording his
It was that log, was that was unique too,
and he was like, you know, he's like looking at the camera, he's like really engaging the audience, kind of like breaking the fourth wall a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it was so well done, and then I love at the end, he's like, I can live with it.
Yeah.
Delete the log.
I'm just not going to tell anybody else except who's in this room. Yeah, it's a good episode. It's interesting. I do have a problem. It's like where Picard would never go for that. Like that would not be part of Picard's vocabulary. He wouldn't let that go that far.
Picard would have negotiated to not go to war in the first place.
Sure. Yeah. No, I know. But it's just. But the whole thing is like he wouldn't have roped the Romulans into it. But it was a good. So yeah. So Sisko tricks the Romulans into thinking the Dominion are gunning for them, and they get into the war, and hopefully in the end, that's enough to stop the Dominion. From taking over the Federation, which was they took over Beta Zed in that one. They never really clear up what happened to Beta Zed afterward. Just one day, I guess they pushed him back.
Loxana Choi was probably trying to sleep with whatever Vorta or Jim Hadar was in.
They all just left. Oh, I gotta get out of here.
Loxana Choi is the secret weapon of the Federation.
I wouldn't say no to Roxana Choi. If she came back, I'd be like, yeah, all right. She was a very, very good looking lady.
She was, even throughout Next Generation and Deep Space Nine the couple of times
she came. She was all about Odo, and Odo was like, no way. I was like, Odo, what's wrong with you, man? Something's not working. You can take any shape you want.
He doesn't see the point.
No, he doesn't. Well, while we're on Deep Space Nine, let's talk about one of my favorites. I was conflicted. There's a few Deep Space Nines I did like and I wanted to talk about, but this one I think was better for me was Paradise. That's another standalone. We don't really have to, you don't have to see a lot in the background for that. It's just basically, they go into the Delta Quadrant to look into, a planet, and they find a small, what was that, a colony?
It was a crashed ship. They were looking for, they were just kind of looking to go, have their own planet to do. I don't even think they were... Yeah, they were looking for a planet, but then they crash-landed on one that was way out of the way.
Right, right. And what happened was they find a civilization of basically Luddites who don't believe in technology, that conveniently uses technology secretly. And unfortunately, they... mostly Sisko gets treated pretty bad. O'Brien... You know, he could have gotten in trouble a couple times, but Sisko kept on taking the knocks for O'Brien.
But, like, I don't remember any part in the episode where Sisko was like, oh, we're going to embrace your culture with open arms, and we're going to indoctrinate ourselves in it.
Right.
They should have been separate and distinct. I don't understand why he just, like, I guess for the drama of it, but he never was like, he was never on board with being a part of the culture. He was always on board with being rescued, you know, whatever. It's like, they should have just let them live.
Right. There was a lot, but I mean, obviously I don't even want to call it the cult leader, but she was some sort of cultish type of figure, town leader, Alexis. That's her name, I think, she's a control freak, and she doesn't want anybody to think differently to her, and you know, and the thing is, I think she felt that if Sisko and O'Brien did get a chance to leave, they would encourage other people to leave, and she didn't want to keep that control. She was afraid that more people would leave their little farming community.
She also apparently had some sort of transporter, because like she sends her own about into a star. She tries to, but it skips off the atmosphere. She's a little bit rusty with technology, but she's got a transporter, beams up to it apparently, sets it on a crash course, and then beams back down to the planet, then turns back on her anti-technology device.
Right. So they're definitely, you know, first of all, she's a hypocrite because she keeps on telling we don't need technology, we don't need it, but they use technology first to stop anything like phasers or anything being used in their town, village, or whatever you want to call it. But, obviously, like I said, she's got some kind of transporting capability or somehow that works. So they don't really go into full explanation on that.
I feel like that should have had some sort of range. It's like, I don't think they said it was over the whole planet. If that was over the whole planet, that's some nice piece of technology. I don't know why Sisko and O'Brien just didn't, like, walk outside the field's radius and then...
Well, but they didn't know. And then, but O'Brien was searching for what was going on. You know, he's looking around, you know, poking around while Sisko's in the box. So
the hot box.
The hot box. That was... It was great, too, because I thought Sisko going in that box and the performance of him just not... I mean, it's very similar to Chain of Command with Picard. He's like, you're not going to break me. You know, it's like, no matter what, you're ludicrous. I'm not going to be broken by your will. My will is stronger than yours.
Or seduced by the woman that was sent into his room the night before.
That would have been hard. You know, she was actually, I was looking at that. Her character was actually in another, she was an ensign in a earlier Next Generation.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, she shows up, and I recognize her now that I think about it, because I remember seeing the episode. I was like, why does she look familiar? She was an ensign. It's called the Arsenal of Freedom, and her name, the actress name is Julia Nixon. So she's a Star Trek regular.
Well, Star Trek traditionally uses a lot of the same actors over and over.
Just recycle them.
Like, Jeffrey Combs is amazing as Wayoon, and then as Inspector Brunt, and then, of course, the Andorian. I'm blanking on his name right now.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I can't remember his name either, but yeah, he's perfect for that role, man.
He embodied all of his characters with such different personality. He was probably the best regular extra.
There's been quite a lot. I mean, even the character of Sarek plays a Romulan commander. And even briefly in Star Trek, the motion picture, he's a Klingon captain, so gets destroyed immediately. But so anyways, but
he was the last one to go down into the three. He tried the aft torpedo, and it just failed.
So that's my Deep Space Nine. What's another one of yours?
I went for Darmok, and I know you're facepalming at this right now. I love Darmok. It's what I think should happen more often with the Universal Translator. They kind of do it a little bit in Enterprise, where the true Universal Translator doesn't work right.
Right.
But, I don't know, it's just Picard's rocking his new jacket. It's awesome.
That's...
And,
everyone's scratching their head on that jacket when they came out. It's like, why do you have a jacket on? Is he cold?
His back hurt from, like, the spandex one-piece uniform, so they finally let him...
change it up a little bit.
Well, I mean, the uniform changed every single season for the first, like, three seasons to make it a little bit more comfortable. Then it switched to, like, a two-piece, and then he complained enough so they gave him a jacket so he could, you know, be a lot more comfortable.
Right. Darmok is... In essence, I don't hate it. It's just watching it is painful for me because it's... It just the repetition of the lines that the aliens use constantly that, you know, Picard can't understand, you know, or the whole crew can't understand for that matter. It's very frustrating, you know, because you're just seeing the same stories and that nobody's on. I mean, the universal translator is working technically; it's just not working to convey their ideas.
Well. If they used any more in the episode, I think it would have been even less watchable.
Right.
With repetition, there's inferred meaning.
Sure, absolutely. And you know, people start trying to figure that out. It is funny, though, is when they kind of, you know, kidnap Picard and they put him on the planet with the captain, where he's trying to give him the knife. to fight the whatever that strange creature on the planet was. I had a flashback thinking of like how unsuited anybody other than Picard, because if it was Kirk on that planet, Kirk would have grabbed that knife and probably stabbed the captain and the whole thing would have fallen apart. I mean, Kirk is not a man of patience. And I kept on thinking of him like talking to the aliens and just telling them like, you're going to have to learn to speak normal English. If you want to be part of this Federation in this universe, you have to learn to speak normal English. None of this shitty stories. But Picard's got the patience for it, and he wanted to figure it out. I mean, Picard was cautious, of course. At first he thought he wanted to fight him, and then he realized that that's not what he was trying to do.
Picard probably read about the story with Captain Kirk and the Gorn, so instead of fighting at all, he was just going to resist completely.
Yeah, I know those are telltale, the Academy stories, so they know not to fight just the first alien they see on a planet by themselves.
Oh, unless they're predators, because they put them on a planet with predators.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, well, it was like technically Predator, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, they don't really show it, but it's like, that could have been Predator.
I mean, they did everything but have the eyes flash yellow.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that could have been Predator. They don't know. But I kind of think Predator would have actually killed them pretty quickly if they didn't, you know. Predator was a pretty ruthless killer.
Yeah, but Predator usually didn't kill two people together very quickly. He kind of liked the hunt. Oh, he liked the hunt, but I also think he liked the mentalized terror of like letting the person live for a little while longer.
Let him keep running. Let me think I'm all right. I'm right behind him. They just don't know.
It's the psychology of what he's doing to the prey.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It is an interesting concept for a show. You're not the first friend to tell me that that's one of their favorite Next Generation. I don't hate it, but I just don't love it. And I don't think I could watch it more than once every 2 or 3 years.
I want to say, like, when Playboy did their, like, best, they ranked every single episode of Star Trek ever.
Right.
That link was passed around Facebook a whole bunch. Like, I think Darmok was in, like, top 5 or 10. It was, yeah. It was really high up there.
No, a lot of people like it. It's just not my thing. I like the idea of Darmok. It just, the actual whole episode, if you haven't seen it, you really should see it, because there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of like the crew, obviously the Enterprise crew is very brilliant. They're smart. And these guys, the aliens show up to talk to them, and they just cannot figure out what they're trying to convey to them. They're speaking like English, but the words just don't make any sense to them because they're telling them, talking to them through story.
Oh, metaphor.
Yeah.
And it was one of my favorite parts of the show when the alien captain's dying and he tells them the story of Gilgamesh through yeah, story.
Absolutely.
And then the guy's like, dude, that's an awesome story.
But yeah.
He can't convey that to Picard other than like,
yeah,
Timba, his arms wide. That
just
was
loves
awesome.
It. Yeah, and certainly after, sadly, the captain doesn't make it. So, but yeah, no, it's a great concept, and I do like that part of it. Somebody was, I don't know who was talking to me about. They were talking about if we actually did meet aliens, like it's very improbable that we'd actually be able to communicate with them, because it's like, think about it. Like dolphins have their own language.
Whales,
and we don't know what the heck they're saying. You know, I mean, there are people actually, scientists working on it, and they think they have certain things figured out. But
I literally read an article a little bit about, or looked at an article last night about the different whale songs, and they had some audio clips,
right?
And they weren't nearly as nice sounding as they were in Star Trek IV.
Yeah, well,
they were a lot more guttural and high pitched.
They picked the best of the best for that, the greatest hits of whale songs. So, no, but it is interesting that to think about if we ever did meet aliens. That we might not be able to talk to them for a very long time because we are going to be, you know, they won't understand us, we won't understand them.
Unless they bring the Universal Translator.
Hopefully they have one.
Let's hope so. Hopefully they watch enough Star Trek from our historical records to have built a
right.
A Universal Translator.
So another one of mine, we're going to go onto the Wayback Machine. This is one of my favorites. It's Galileo 7. 1967. This is where the Enterprise is delivering some much-needed medicines to a plague planet, and they're ahead of schedule, and they run into a quasar, and they're like, "Well, I have command. I have orders from Starfleet that Kirk says I have to investigate a quasar if I come upon one. So they send out a shuttle with Spock, McCoy, Scotty, and a couple of lower ranking officers.
Red shirts?
Actually, there's no red shirts on that. Well, no. What's her name? Yeoman Mears is a red shirt, but she lives. But anyways, they go to into some ionization, and all of a sudden they are thrown onto some planet within the system, and because of the ionization, Kirk can't find the Galileo shuttlecraft, and they only have about 2 days, 24 hours to find the Galileo shuttlecraft. And before they have to deliver that medicine to the plague planet. I think what's great about it for me is obviously, Kirk's trying to figure out where his, some of his friends are, his crewmates are, and that's kind of panicking at the first thing. But also it's Spock's first shot at being in command. And he does his best. But he really misses the mark on this, and it's great to see that such a superb character like Spock, who's always doing everything right, didn't quite do everything quite as right as he probably could.
Logic disc takes this.
Yeah, it's like when you meet somebody who has a very high IQ, but they have a very low EQ.
So with Asperger's.
Yeah, I mean it's like they're smart. There's nothing wrong with them, but they just don't pick up on the social. Or cultural sides of things, and they can step on toes, or they miss cues because they're not seeing it. So, it's a great episode for me. I think everyone should watch it if you're into Star Trek. Especially, I know a lot of people shy away from the original series because it's got its own hokiness because it was produced in the 60s. Like visually, it's not as strong. As like Next Generation and all the preceding series that come after that, but it's a well written episode. So I just think this is one of the very top ones for me that I want to see.
It was really good. It was I liked it personally a lot better than City on the Edge of Forever, which was another one on your list.
Yeah.
Because we went and watched them, so we could be a little bit more fresh for the podcast on each other's top five.
Right. What did you like about it? Anything in particular? The giant cavemen that lived on the planet. They're pretty terrible.
I love how the guy ran into a corner and just like shrunk and hoped that he wouldn't get hit.
Yeah, he was like, all your Starfleet training went out the window. No, but it is showing that even logical, like Spock doesn't want to. The great thing about Spock is he has a great respect for life, and he doesn't want to kill the aliens. He just wants to scare them at first. And they're on this planet with these giant ape-like creatures, and they
with giant plastic spears.
Yes, and they keep on killing off the crew for the Galileo. And Spock is trying to get this Galileo to lift off and leave the planet and go back to the Enterprise. So
he has to drain their phasers, and they're like, "We're not giving up our phasers. Yeah. There's monsters out there."
And it's almost mutinous at a couple points. Like they're, besides Scotty and McCoy, they're all very much like the lower class ranks. They're very like, no way, this is not happening. You don't have what it takes to command. I mean, they don't say it, but they're basically inferring it. And on that episode as well is what's great is the we haven't really talked about it, but I think we should is the Commissioner Ferris, who is Captain Kirk's nemesis in this. He's just a bureaucrat who obviously is trying to keep Kirk on task to get the medicine back to the plague planet, but he's just annoying as hell.
His cape is awesome. I'm glad they're in style in the 23rd century.
It's the stupidest cape too. It's not a real cape. It just goes down to his shoulder blades. I don't even understand why he has it.
Maybe he's got like a growth on his back. It hides his humpback.
He's got a humpback. It would make sense that he has a humpback because he is just. He has no personality. How he got elected or whatever he got into that position, I have no idea. Ingratiated to whoever, but he is just, I mean, I understand what his position is. Like, he says, we need to get this medicine to the crew. But even that being said, he must understand that Kirk's got his crewmates are lost out there somewhere in that star system. So,
lost Starfleet officers are no good. We got more of them at home.
There's plenty more. But it is one of those things that's just like, man, you know.
I just felt like it was really circumstantial that they had to go out to explore this unknown phenomena under a time crunch. It just seemed like a bad.
Yeah, why not just swing back or just tell another ship to come and say, but their star maps must have let them know that there was a quasar there.
Or why not go scan it with the Enterprise? It's not like the Enterprise couldn't go in there because the Enterprise ends up orbiting the planet they can find the Galileo 7.
Well, then the Enterprise would have crashed on the planet and then they would never have gotten out of there.
Hey, that would be great. We could have another Enterprise before.
Yeah.
We could reenact the scene from Star Trek Generations.
There you go, where it crashes on the planet. No, but it's... It's a well-written episode, and it's a good character study of especially Spock. So you're seeing Spock the first time trying to learn how to command. So
I the best part I think for me was Spock panics, and then at the end he comes up with a logical explanation of why panic is acceptable.
Yeah, they say it was an illogical move, but I don't really see it as illogical. It seems very calculated. It is a desperate last move, but I don't think that's illogical. You know, it's like, well, what's the best way to signal the Enterprise? Oh, you know, we could jettison all our fuel and let it all burn up, and maybe they could see that
a flare.
Yeah, and it's great. It's so well written. That's the great part about it. It's like. You can if you're into a good story, you can look past all the cheesy cavemen aliens throwing plastic spears.
Definitely, and I definitely enjoyed it more than Sedona Azure Forever, which was your next favorite.
Right, yeah. Do you want to do yours, or you want to just talk about Sedona Azure Forever?
You can do yours because I forgot what my fifth one was. I've been watching.
I'll tell you what it is, but let's talk about Sedona Azure Forever. This I think is. One of the funnest, interesting... This is another more character-driven story. It's basically Kirk making the choice of his falling in love and what has to be done and what's the best thing to do for the human race. And the story of City of Edge Forever, they are... I forgot why the ship gets in they hit some kind of storm or something, and
there's time waves being emanated from the planet.
That's right. That's what it was.
Time can shake your ship.
Everything shakes the ship back in the next. The original series, they just had to have the crew jump around. So, Sulu gets hurt in one of these time waves, and McCoy comes up with some medicine, and even Kirk says that's some pretty risky medicine, and you know, McCoy's like, yeah, son,
LSD.
So
because it was the '60s after all.
Yeah, right. So he shoots up Sulu, and Sulu comes right back. He's fine, and then they hit another time wave, and unfortunately, McCoy gets. Rams the hypo spray into his gut, and the whole thing goes into his body. McCoy loses his mind and runs off the bridge. Somehow he gets onto the transporter room. He's like paranoid. Like I don't know. He's like he has a paranoia. That's what comes over him. Other than the complete insanity, and he goes down, beams down the planet.
I don't know how you can be paranoid in a society that is so. Like anti-war, discrimination.
Well, he keeps on yelling, murderers, assassins, you know, they're going to kill me. So, obviously,
how many of those are in the 23rd century?
There's got to be a few, but
other than in the Orion Syndicate.
Yeah. Well, there's a few, but I think what happens more than anything is he, obviously is paranoid. This is his inner demons that he's worried about, so...
His dad coming back after the 2 months.
Trying to kill him. So he beams out of this planet, these ruins of an old civilization that's no longer there. And Kirk and crew come down to search for him. And during that time, they find a strange structure. This is called the Guardian. And the Guardian is basically a giant portal that can take you any place in time, future, past, and you can either just watch it from afar or you can actually go into it.
I wonder if the Guardian was like a sentient version of one of the Iconians' time travel devices, because if you look at that Next Generation, it's very similar. It just shows like quick flashes of...
Right. Well, and he and they asked him...
Maybe they stole that. Maybe they studied that and stole, got the technology from the Guardian.
It's possible. And they even asked the Guardian, like, are you a living or a machine? And he said both. So he's technically a living machine, and that his technology and everything is beyond their comprehension, which I love Spock's look in his face. He's like, oh, really? I'll figure this shit out. So they go... McCoy runs into the Guardian's portal and goes into back into history. And suddenly they realize that they try to call up to the Enterprise. The Enterprise is no longer there. And they realize by doing some research down on the planet that McCoy going back in time through the Guardian, he has altered time and they have to go back after him. And they talk to the Guardian to get him to go back to the same point or close to the same point. And Kirk and Spock jump through the portal and land back in basically the Great Depression just before World War II. And they are, what are they, in San Francisco? No, they're in L.A., right? I can't quite remember which city. But they are basically in, you know, pre-World War II city during world just before World War II, and they're kind of like a fish out of water. Like, it's obviously Spock doesn't look right.
They steal clothes.
They steal like clothes.
Star Trek training. Steal clothes if you can sit back.
Always steal clothes. Always steal somebody's clothes. So they steal clothes so they look normal. Spock wears a hat most of the time so no one can see him, and they kind of make a... some racist remark about him being Chinese. He got his head stuck in a rice picker machine. So obviously it's 1967, 60, but they still haven't quite got past all the little racist jokes here and there. But they run into what is going to be Kirk's love interest is Edith Keller, which is played by Joan Collins. And Kirk just falls completely in love with this girl. And she is a visionary in her own time. She sees things differently than other people do. She thinks that there's hope for the human race, and that we could work out things peacefully. We can have technology to go to the moon, maybe further. And just Kirk just loves all this. It just thinks it's great.
She's like, you belong in the 23rd century.
She and it's cool. There's definitely a chemistry actually between the actors. You can tell that, you know, like Shatner is kind of digging being with the actress Joan Collins. So, and but what they find out is that if Edith Keeler is supposed to die in that time stream to and if she didn't, she would have inspired more people for peace, and it would have made a pacifist movement within America, and America would have never entered World War II, and because of that, the Nazis would have won and taken over the world, and who knows what kind of horrors that would have brought. So,
in order for the future to be safe, Joan Collins has to hug a bus.
Yes, so Kirk, they do run into McCoy later on, and unfortunately, the Edith character, she gets hit by a truck, bus, car, something, and Kirk could have saved her, and he doesn't save her, and he's all torn up about it. So I just think it's great. It's got tragedy to it, you know. It's like it's a Kirk driven story, which is great, because it's not him just beating people up the whole time too, which, I mean, those are fun. But, you know, it's like he falls in love and he's got to kind of wrestle with what he wants compared to what's right for all humanity. So,
and the future of a ship.
Well, yeah, that too. But, I mean, the ship is, I mean, he could have, I mean, technically they could have stayed in that time period if they wanted to, or he could have, but he was...
Spock wouldn't have wanted to, with, like, Spock bear skins and...
I know. He hated that, yeah. Yeah, but in the episode, too, Spock's trying to create a computer to get his tricorder working properly, and he's using, like, light bulbs and all sorts of fuses and stuff like that, and they keep on blowing up on him, and it's hilarious.
Vacuum tubes.
Yeah, vacuum tubes, and just, it's hilarious because he... You know, Spock being logical and a quiet man is completely in just is you could tell is he's annoyed that he has to even work with these things, you know. And Captain Kirk keeps on pushing him to do it, and Spock's like, it doesn't work. I don't have the technology in this time period.
Although that technology looks more advanced than the stuff they open up underneath the consoles.
That's the true. I was just thinking about that the other day. Some of the stuff you're like, what? So
underneath the consoles, it looks like a hubcap and like a bunch of just random wires.
That's where they throw all their garbage under there. It's like there's old Milky Way wrappers and stuff like that. Like, Uhura is just throwing, like, you know, candy bar wrappers under her console. It's like, it's not a garbage can, Uhura!
Oh, that's crazy.
So that was mine. And the other one that you had that you listed, well, you had actually two others.
Yeah, one was Bound.
Bound and then, from Enterprise.
Yeah, like we were discussing this at work, we were like we can't think of a good Enterprise episode.
I love Enterprise. There's so much I love about Enterprise, but there's a hard to find a standalone episode that's like so fun to watch.
Yeah, Bound for me was really good because I've always loved the Orions. I always felt like they're extremely underused, and that episode kind of gives us the biggest, I guess, plot twist about the Orions is that the women are in control of the men, even though they pose as slaves all the time.
Right.
And I found that extremely interesting.
I actually like to dub the story should have been called The Erotic Adventures of Captain Archer, because the women just kept trying to seduce everybody. It's hilarious. I mean, it's like, first of all, Orion slave girls, I mean... Is there anything better in Star Trek lore? Is a green woman scantily clad running through the set? But that being said, it is interesting to see that there is like a hierarchy, because you think that the Orion men, because they're so powerful, that they're the ones in control.
They are like hulks.
Yeah,
literally, they're green.
They're green. And they're big.
They're ripped.
Right, right. But what you don't understand is that through the women's pheromones, that they are controlling the men. And they have a little trick they try to throw onto them where they put they give these women as gifts to Archer. And because of that, they come aboard and they start really manipulating the men.
And the only person who is not affected is Trip. And I almost think Bound is almost not even a reference to the Orions. I think it's more a reference to Trip and T'Pol.
I think it is too.
Because when they had their intimate encounter... And she was just like, "Oh, I was just experimenting." That bonded them,
yeah,
and it protected him from the pheromones because, like,
they had that psychic bond. Yeah, I enjoyed that, and I even enjoyed the little quip ending with Trip and T'Pol at the very end, where he's going to be transported. He's going to go back to the Columbia, where he was going to be chief engineer. And, you know, T'Pol has to tell him that she wants him on the ship.
And then he ends up saying, I already did it. But that dialogue together is, to me, like, where the episode was kind of, like titled from, even though, you know.
Yeah.
I think all the other stuff was happenstance, and that was the real part of the story, like where the Bound thing came from. That's just my interpretation of it.
Right. No, I agree. I think that's, I mean, it also just means that the, you know, obviously that there's a little thing that the Orion captain says at the end where he says, it's the other way. We're bound to, you know, these women, or we're slaves to these women, just as you're slaves to, you know, whatever he said. But I mean, he's basically making the reference that we're all slaves to something, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, but it is cool that the Trip and T'Pol little thing, it's way underplayed through the whole thing until the very end. You don't really pick up on it. But and it's great to see all the guys go just lose their minds.
Oh, it's great. And the replacement engineer tries to blow up the ship.
Yeah, he's like, yeah.
I didn't do it. 16 people in engineering saw you do it.
It's like, just like goes to show you, a girl can make you do some crazy shit.
Oh, but Captain Archer, like, I love, like, when the guy's on the bed and engineering, in sick bay, and, like, he's, like, trying to shake the information out of him, because he's also under the influence of the pheromones, and he's just... got a lot of sexual frustration. And he's just trying to beat it out of the guy. Flocks is like, he's not going to give anything. I'm just going to sedate him.
He's too out of his mind. He can't say. He's got green fever. So
it ain't easy being green.
No, they're all like, all the guys are just going. It's a funny episode in that way, just to see him all lose. Even like Archer, who's a pretty even keel guy. Like, he wants to blow up that ship when it comes out of that planet system. He's like, just blow it up. And they're like, no, I'm not going to. Like, Malcolm's like, I'm not going to blow that ship up. And, you know.
It's like, you interrupted me, guys. You interrupted me.
I was going to have some real green fun. And I had to come up to this goddamn bridge for this damn ship. We're blowing that shit up. I don't come up to the bridge without blowing something up, okay? So that is... That is an interesting episode. I think there's a lot of really good Enterprise episodes. That one's just fun to watch, especially just because the green women are so just fun.
And it's about time they got the makeup right, because I actually rewatched The Cage recently, and she's got all these makeup splotches missing, and since Enterprise was shot in high definition, they had to, you know, do a lot better job of the makeup.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, we were just talking about sitting on the edge of forever. I forgot to mention my favorite part when the bum picks up
McCoy's
phaser, shoots himself, and somehow vaporizes the gun, too. I'm like, how did that get left? Wouldn't that have messed up the space-time continuum if the phaser was left in the...
Yeah, it probably would. It's like, hey, what's this, you know?
And also, the Guardian of Forever, old Spock knows about it. Like, they should totally, in the third Star Trek movie, go to the Guardian of Forever and stop Nero from blowing up Vulcan.
I'll just go back here. It's fine. I know about this. Yeah. I know. Yeah. There's a lot to be said about what happened there, unless they just don't realize it. But old Spock would know about it, so he could have changed that.
Yeah. They could have, like, fixed all the stuff that happened. They wouldn't even have to do any other kind of, like, weird time travel. The Guardian Forever is in canon. They don't have to, like, come up with any other strange reason to go back in time.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about go that far in my head with that.
I didn't think about it till just now when we were talking about the Guardian Forever. I'm like, dude, Spock knows about this. Why didn't he tell them? Like, just, like, it's like, oh, yeah, Vulcan's dead. Okay, we can fix this. We can go back.
I can go back and fix this. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, the crazy twist for Star Trek 2009.
I know. That would have everyone would blow their mind. Or they just get completely lost.
Since most of the audience wouldn't know.
Yeah, they're like, who's Guardian Edge of what? your other one was Valiant. This is a Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I wanted to have another Deep Space Nine because I was going to go Family because I love Family. And it's a great follow-up to Best of Both Worlds. But I lean toward Deep Space Nine.
You're
is my
Deep
favorite.
Space Nine, yeah, big fan for that. I want to hear what makes you like this episode because I have some issues with this episode.
Well, I like it because it's such a one-off episode. It's got almost none of the main cast in it except for Aaron Eisenberg and Jake, the guy who plays Jake. They're going to Ferenginar, and then their runabout gets chased by some Jem'Hadar ships. Mm-hmm. And then another, Defiant-class ship drops out of warp, and they think, oh, it's the Defiant, they're going to come save us, and it turns out it's the Valiant. Mm-hmm. Funny thing is, the Valiant was actually going to be the name of the Defiant originally, but they didn't want to have two ships that started with letter V,
right?
Because Voyager was playing at the same time.
You don't want to confuse the audience.
Yeah.
That would be too much for our brains to handle.
We're all dim-witted.
Anyways, so they go, they find the Defiant, and the Defiant is, the crew is a
whole bunch of Red Squad guys, and we know those guys are trustworthy.
and their starburst patterns or whatever that move that they, I can't remember what it was called, but.
I'm pretty sure it was like starburst something.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen that episode with Wesley, but like we all know Red Squadron is so like, you know, awesome.
Yeah, they're like the top gun of the Federation. They're like that the crackerjack pilots.
But they're all jerks.
Oh, they're such assholes.
They're so bad.
They're so bad. They're like the frat boys. They're like every like frat kid you ever met. You're like, just shake your head. Like, you are just such a tool.
But it was so great. So they're Red Squad. They've got the ship. All the senior staff has died. And eventually we want to do an Incompetent Captains of Star Trek. And this is going to be one of the things that comes up on the Incompetent Captains there. Of Star Trek. Because instead of telling them to go home, he lets them, like, he puts, you know, as his dying breath, he doesn't tell them to go home. He tells them to finish their mission.
Yeah.
And it's to find this, like, super weapon that the Jem'Hadar have.
All they got to do is scan this battleship and leave. But then he's like, you know, we're here.
Let's blow it up.
Let's blow it up. And he's like, it's a battleship, and we're in the Defiant class. Defiant's tough, don't get me wrong, but this is a battleship.
It was basically Death Star size.
Oh, it's huge.
Because considering it was like, you know, for, you know, against a Defiant, which right. is small even for a Federation ship.
Right, it's a very small ship, yeah.
And then they come up with a Death Star trench run plan against it.
Yeah, they got some things. Fails. Like, it just does not work. And whatever they're, it just it comes down to is like, you know, the crew is, even though they're all very, very good at what they do, they are still cadets. And they don't have the experience, you know, so... It's a big problem.
and Nog gets a huge promotion, like
a field commission. Yeah,
and he is almost kind of seduced by that. And
oh, of course, who wouldn't?
And he totally goes, you know, all for it, and even kind of like you know shows the hand to his best friend Jake. It's like I'm not listening to you,
Jake. Jake in the beginning seems a little annoying because he's so unprincipled at this point because he's not a Federation. You know, obviously he didn't go to the Academy. He's not going to follow in his father's footsteps in Starfleet. But he's actually in the end the voice of reason, where he kind of like says, you know, like what? Why are we attacking this battleship?
It's about the only episode where I find Jake is not annoying.
I don't know. Jake's not my favorite character, but that being said, it was good to see that he was like, excuse me, I don't think this is going to work.
And then, like, you know, Jake talked to the girl about her home, and then she, like, started crying, and then the captain, like, it was this really awkward situation where the captain and the first officer brought him in and was like, so you're not supposed to talk to girls while you're on the ship.
Yeah, well, what's worse about it is their commanding officer, or the lieutenant commander, or no, not lieutenant, the commander, not the captain, the girl, is her name Ferris? Or I think so. I can't remember.
I don't remember.
But she is just unsufferable. She's just, I mean, she's cute. That's all I can give her.
Yeah.
She is just unsufferable. It's like every minute, like Jake walks in, he's like, I don't remember you being inviting on the bridge, you know? It's like, you know, it's like Jake just keeps rolling his eyes through the whole thing. He's like, oh my God, shut up, you know?
But like, I think the best moment for me and why it kind of sticks with me so much is at the end, Nog is in the hospital bed because it's only Jake Nog and the transporter chief girl survive. Mm-hmm. And she's still like, oh, they were so great. And Nog's like, no.
Yeah.
They made really bad decisions. I can see that now. I'm like, it's just like, you know, I'm so glad Nog kind of came to the realization that it was just crazy.
Well, he even said to her, I think the last line was, you know, he was a great man. But a terrible captain.
But he could be a terrible captain. Yeah, so, like, that just...
the captain was popping pills through the whole thing. You know, they don't really... You don't say what he's taking, but he's doing something. He's popping some type of pills that he's, like, you know, keeping himself going because he just doesn't sleep, but he's...
Cocaine in pill form.
Yeah, whatever it is back in the future. But I do like the Jake character in this... Nog's Nog. I mean, I like to see Nog has evolved at this point, but the crew of the Valiant is just a bunch of jerks, you know? I mean, it's just, especially the command. It's so ridiculous, so.
They are, and it was a good one-off episode, and it's another one where you didn't really have to have any background, right. Which is why I picked it, where...
Deep Space Nine is hard to get into sometimes, because especially during the Dominion War, because there's a lot to... considered from past episodes and it's part of the thread of the story,
which is why I like it so much, because it's one of the few Star Trek, the only Star Trek series that really has like a continuing arc from like pretty much beginning the end of season two all the way to the end of season seven.
Right.
And they don't even have to say to be continued because I mean a lot of the episodes immediately pick up right after. So that's what I loved about it, that it had a, you know, an arc storyline to it, whereas the original series Next Generation, the only arcs they had were their two-parters,
and you know maybe some a character would show up again from a past episode. You know, they explain a little bit, but yeah, for the most part.
I mean, Enterprise had like a one-season arc with, you know, the Florida getting, you know, cut in half.
Trip's like, no, Pensacola! Trip. Yeah, no, but, it's just not, to me, that would not be, all the ones that you've picked, I actually do like a lot of them, but that, even Darmok, I don't enjoy watching, but I like the premise of it. Valiant, I just walk away just shaking my head like, what a bunch of pricks.
But that's, know? I mean, I liked it because it was so, it's the one you can latch onto. It was a well-done episode, well-acted, and it just shows that what's supposed to be the best of the best in the Federation
right.
isn't. Well, there's trouble in paradise,
right? And that's the thing is, I think what we all realize as we age is that what we knew when we were, you know, 20 some years old, you know, we think we know everything, and then we get to a point where like, oh, I guess I didn't have that all figured out. You know, I thought I did at the time, and their problem is that they're so good at what they do, they're overconfident. So, it's got points, and it is fun to see a crew that's not part of Deep Space Nine, you know. I mean, basically the crew shows up at the very end. The Defiant shows up to save them, but besides that,
yeah, it was good, and I just loved how it was kind of out of the box and it just was its own contained episode.
Yeah, it was cool,
and just the realization. I'm glad Nog had an arc in that one where he was like totally seduced by the power that he got. Oh, I'm chief engineer. That's awesome. And then he realizes that they were totally wrong on what they did.
Right. Yeah, so that was some of our favorites. There's a lot to pick from, and it was hard to pick, you know, just a few, but we could keep going, I'm sure.
That's why I forgot my fifth episode. There's so many. I was like, all right, don't I was,
there's, I,
was
I mean, there's, back and forth there's so a many. Ton of Deep Space Nine ones I like. There's even a couple of Voyagers I like, but, I could pick probably almost half of the original series I love. So, I mean, but there's like, you know, obviously you're only going to talk so much about them. So, but those are some of our favorites. Kind of give you like a look inside our brains.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, going forward, we're going to provide our email address, which is synthaholics@yahoo.com. If you guys want to hear us specifically, like hear our takes on an episode, we can like maybe spend a whole episode just, you know, doing an episode review. So we'd love to hear from you guys. Actually, last week, I guess 2 weekends ago now, I was at PAX East, and there was a team there from the company Disruptor Beam. And I got to speak with their CEO and some of their other members.
You mean you snuck in? Like, who are you?
No, they had a party at the Whiskey Priest.
And I was hiding under the table. No, this is all above board.
I went to PAX East, and I knew they were going to be there, and I signed up to go to their party at the Whiskey Priest, and so we had some whiskey, and I talked with the guys about Star Trek, and I asked them if it was okay if I could interview them. So I actually did get to interview a couple of them. I'm going to play the CEO, John Radoff's interview with him that I had, and they're doing a Star Trek game called Star Trek Timelines. I'm going to have their information in the show notes. It looks really interesting. It looks beautiful, and I don't know how they're making such a nice looking game for iPhone and iPad. They've got Deep Space Nine fully rendered in 3D.
That's amazing.
You can be play as different starships. They had the Enterprise TOS version, Enterprise D.
That's awesome.
They had a Cardassian ship, and I think a Bird of Prey. Chose the Cardassian ship because like, you don't see them much.
Right.
You can spin around, and you can like put the different officers in different places on the ship. Like you can put like there's 10 forward on the Enterprise. You can like put someone 10 forward. I'm like, oh, you gotta have Quark. So I'm hoping I can like put Quark into the bartender thing.
That's great.
But it's like story driven, and everyone's got different stats, and it's a pretty interesting game. And I'll go ahead and put on my little intro at PAX East, and then we'll hear what John Radoff had to say.
Can't wait to hear it.
This is David from Synthaholics.
We are live at PAX East 2015, and I am about to go speak with the guys at Disruptor Beam about their Star Trek game called Star Trek Timelines. So I'm looking forward to talking with these guys and hear what they have to say about the game and what they think about Star Trek and everything. So I can't wait. So I'm sitting here with John Radoff. Is that right?
John Radoff. Yep.
Yes. He's the CEO of Disruptor Beam. And could you tell us a little bit about your company?
Sure. Disruptor Beam is about 4 years old. We're 40 people. We got started because I really love MMOs and adventure games and strategy games and things like that. And when I looked at mobile and social gaming, I didn't really see the depth of gameplay that I had, you know, really enjoyed over decades of gaming. So I thought we would have a chance to really bring that kind of depth to the social and mobile markets. At the same time, there's these huge communities that I also consider myself a member of. So Game of Thrones, Star Trek, you know, these are the worlds where I want to play games. So, you know, it was really those two things together were the genesis of Disruptor Beam. So we got started because I got to know George R. R. Martin and convinced him that we could build this diplomatic, political strategy game for web browsers and later for mobile devices. He got excited about it. We got the license. We got to work with HBO and build a tremendous game that's now gotten over 8 million players. And now we're developing Star Trek Timelines. That's what we've been doing for the last year, and we're going to have a game that we're going to be able to ship by the end of this year.
Oh, that's awesome. So you all got to work with George R. R. Martin. How did the Star Trek one come about?
Well, we had earned a lot of credibility, I think, with the creation of Game of Thrones Ascent. So we actually sought them out. So we came knocking on the door at CBS and said that we were interested in making a Star Trek game that, like Game of Thrones Ascent, would really focus on characters and really bring together more to the gameplay experience than just a combat simulator, which is what most people have done when they build Star Trek games in the past. But Star Trek, of course, has diplomacy and politics and science and engineering and exploration, all these other aspects that just aren't, that if you miss them, you don't have a Star Trek game. You only have a part of the Star Trek universe. So they liked that a lot. They thought that we really got it in terms of what the vision for Star Trek was. So that's how that came about. We persuaded them that we'd be the ones to build this game. So now we're building it.
Yeah, that's really excellent. And I got to play the demo the other day when we were here. It was a lot of fun. Can you tell us about the idea behind the game and like its story outline or how it's supposed to flow?
Sure. Well, the background of the game is that there's been a crisis in the space-time continuum, and the mirror universes and the different timelines are actually getting merged together in the galaxy. So the consequence of that is that you've got the mirror universe, you've got the Terran Empire, you've got the Federation, you've got, you know, all these different things going on, you got time loops, but because of that, you've got all the characters from the different eras present. So you could put a crew together that has characters from the original series, from TNG, from Enterprise, Deep Space Nine, you know, all the shows that I've ever been on, even the animated series, most of the movies. So we've got this massive amount of content to draw upon, lots of really interesting characters, and also the different versions of the characters too. So if you could take Picard as one example, you could have Jean-Luc Picard on your crew. You could also have Locutus of Borg. You could have Picard when he retired and became a vintner. You could have Picard when he was sent back in time by Q and became an astrophysicist aboard the Enterprise. You could have Picard when he was in that virtual reality and he learned to play music and had a family and went through his entire lifetime there. So yeah, it's really awesome to be able to like tap into all of that content and all that history and bring it back into the game.
Oh, that's excellent. I can't wait to see what the stats are on a lowly tapestry Picard who can't get a promotion from Riker when he tried so hard to get it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the statting on him will be, but presumably he's pretty good at astrophysics. So
he'll have to get paired up with 7 of 9.
Yeah, exactly.
I know with the Game of Thrones game, it's kind of a linear flee through because you're kind of going through, like, it's a set in stone story. But with this, it sounds, since it's a bridge between, like, everything, all the different possibilities Star Trek has to offer, like, it's going to be a lot more free flowing. And is there, like, kind of an end, or is it just going to be a game that's going to be kind of,
you're going to keep expanding on.
Yeah, so that's a few questions. I'll start with a narrative structure. So it's going to be much less linear than Game of Thrones is, because Game of Thrones has a story that's sort of going, you know, over time, and you are part of that world as it's unfolding, and there's no time travel and stuff like that in Game of Thrones. So it sort of almost demands a certain kind of linear storytelling. Star Trek, you know, by its nature, I mean, go back to the episodes, and that's the word. It's episodic for the most part, until you get to stuff like DS9 had more of a story arc. But even there, you know, it's really about the episodes and these self-contained units. And watching them all in order is often not the most important thing in the world of Star Trek. So for us, we're bringing that into the gameplay as well. So you're going to interact with stories in a very non-linear fashion. There's time travel, there's alternate universes. So you're not going to have to be concerned about having to plow through a linear narrative of thousands of quests to catch up with anybody in the game. But in terms of the end game for Star Trek timelines, that's where it really gets very social, and it's about you teaming up with your friends, forming fleets, and going and try to change the course of the galaxy and change the balance of power in different sectors. So, for example, you could have a sector where, because of this space-time crisis, you've got both the Terran Empire and the Federation vying for control. So you might be a fleet that's more on the side of the Federation. There might be another fleet out there who's going to now be your enemy, probably, because they're on the side of the Terran Empire, and they're both going to try to affect things that are going on in these sectors.
Oh, wow, that sounds really interesting. So there's going to be lots of faction and guilds trying to basically control the galaxy.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the thing that's never going to end in the game. So that's really, you know, what you graduate to after you've sort of built up your crew and work through some of the preset content. Then it's the emergent content. It's about the fleets vying for power in the galaxy and the ongoing story of how that unfolds.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I can't wait to get into the beta a little bit more and dig into it some more. We all know Star Trek fans. 2 weeks ago, Leonard Nimoy passed away. Can you give us what your favorite Leonard Nimoy moment is, Star Trek or not, because he was a talented person in a variety of ways. His movies, his photography, his poetry, anything that you always really remember about Leonard Nimoy?
Well, there's a few things, actually, so I'll just give a couple. So just in terms of, like, his off-Star Trek stuff, I grew up around Boston my whole life, so I've been going, I don't know if where you're from, actually, but here in Boston, we have the Museum of Science, and we have the IMAX Theater there, and Leonard Nimoy introduces the IMAX. So every time I've gone to the IMAX Theater, whether it's as a kid or an adult, they've had the same introduction by Leonard Nimoy that whole time. So I feel like Leonard Nimoy has always been, like, part of the environment here in Boston. Of course, he grew up in Boston. So sort of that's just sort of, you know, I feel like he's been part of the community all along, which is interesting to me, even, you know, beyond Star Trek. In terms of, like, his Star Trek moment, I mean, there's so much great stuff there, but I've got a weird one that no one ever seems to talk about, but I, like, watched the animated series when I was a kid, and I loved the episode, which I can't remember the name of now, where it's young Spock kind of choosing whether he's going to choose more of the Vulcan path or the human path, and he has that animal that he's taking care of, and just the whole drama in that is, to me, was really compelling and great storytelling. But so that's kind of a Leonard Nimoy moment, even though it's, you know, the animated series. It's his voice, I guess.
Yeah, he definitely, the whole cast voiced that, and it was really interesting. I think Leonard Nimoy, he was from here, or he lived here a long portion of his life.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Actually, if you go to the Museum of Science when he introduces it, there's something where it's like, so why am I on this? He says, because I'm from around here. So I think he's always, he was always kind of a part of the community. He hasn't lived here in a while, but Leonard Nimoy is part of the Boston scene.
Yeah, I'm from Buffalo. I mean, I live in Buffalo now. I'm from all over. My dad was a preacher, so I've lived in about 5 states in the South. I've moved all over. I've lived here for about 7 years in Buffalo. I've definitely been to several IMAX theaters all over the country, but I've never had Leonard Nimoy open one up for me. That sounds really nice.
You'll have to go to the Boston Museum of Science and go to the IMAX there.
Well, yeah, I'll definitely check it out. Thank you so much for talking with me, John.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
So that was from PAX East. And
it was great. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was really good getting to talk with them. I got to speak with some of the other development guys also, more specifically about Leonard Nimoy and just kind of what they do at the company. And actually for our next episode, we'll be kind of doing a tribute to Leonard Nimoy and, you know, all the great things he has done. We'll play more of these interviews I got about Leonard Nimoy, and even spoke with one of the cosplayers, Belle Cher, while I was there. She had some nice points to make about him as well.
Very cool. Yeah, the game sounds amazing. It sounds really fun. It's something that I, one of those things I always actually, you know, want to see more in a game, where you have more control over than just a, you know, just a preset of, like, you know, you can play this crew or you can play only this character, you know, that kind of thing. So that's cool. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, I can't wait. You can go to thedestructorbeam.com and you can sign up for the Bridge Crew, which is their beta program.
Awesome.
And I've already signed up. You guys should go in and sign up and check this game out. It's, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I love the social aspect that's going to be there. So we can all get together, talk, and hang out and, like, play the game together. It's going to be a lot of fun.
That sounds awesome. Well, very cool. So we have to wrap up the show for this today, but we have in store our next episode. We're going to be just doing a tribute to Leonard Nimoy and the character of Spock since his recent passing. So that's going to be what we're aiming for our subject line.
Definitely. So we'll see you next time, guys.
Great.
Thank you all for listening. You can find us online at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. Our Twitter is @SynthaholicDuo. If you want to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan and Aaron at Blackbird2004. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and tell your friends about the show. Also, if you could leave us a rating, that would help us out so much. Leaving a rating or review will let us know how to improve and help us reach more of our fellow Trek fans. We'd love to hear your feedback. Live long and prosper. So this is the test for Synthaholics Podcast.
We're going to change Star Trek history with this simple podcast.
Let's hope so.
With drunken debauchery and bad jokes.
The best of the worst. Oh, it would have been great if it would have crashed at that time. Yeah, always the best of the worst.
That's cool.